Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation is with Jean Hickok, Acting Deputy and Undersecretary of the U.S. Department of Education. Joining us in our conversation is Deborah Kemmer. Well, Jean, let's start talking about No Child Left Behind. Could you describe the key features of it for us?
Well, it's founded on four fundamental principles. And if you try to go back and look at the campaign of 2000, when the president, the candidate at the time, was putting together his platform on education, he gave four major speeches that talked about four principles. And then that became the fundamentals for the actual legislation that was introduced early in the first couple of days of this administration. The first is accountability. The argument being that we need to find out how well our kids are doing, how well our schools are doing. We need to make it easy for parents to understand this. And then we need to have ways of identifying what works and ways of identifying what doesn't work and have consequences. Accountability is very important, very important. The second is flexibility. The president used to be a governor. I used to be a state chief. I think we recognize the importance of one size doesn't fit all. Every state's different. The states are the primary actors. So a key aspect of No Child Left Behind is the flexibility to allow states under this broad infrastructure of accountability to approach it as that state feels best. The next are options and choices, third principle. We think it's very important to give parents opportunities that they didn't currently have to pursue what's best for their kids as they see it. If your child is in a school that's not working, it's not your child's fault. It's not your fault. We don't care whose fault it is. But until that school can get its act together, we think it's important that you have an option to send your child to a school that does work, to access supplemental educational services, tutoring service, and that federal taxpayer dollars should help to underwrite that. That's part of this law. It's a fundamental departure from previous elementary and education law, and it's an important distinction. And the fourth principle is doing what works. The quality of research in American education is pretty spotty overall, which is, I think, a sad commentary. If you look at our history in science research and health research, we're pretty much world leaders. The world comes here for the quality of our research in those fields. Our education research isn't the same. And that's something that the federal government really should be doing and doing a much better job of. So one of the goals of No Child Left Behind is to create a world-class research function, rivaling that of NIH, for example, National Institutes of Health, on education. And then as we learn more, use what we learn as what the models for what federal taxpayer dollars help to pay for. One good example, real briefly, is reading instruction. You know, our national reading scores are pretty bad. And yet the science of reading instruction is excellent. We know how to teach reading. The tragedy is the federal taxpayer dollars have gone to support whatever people want to do in reading instruction, not what works. And so with No Child Left Behind, there's a much more rigorous formula grant program to make sure that federal dollars are only used to fund programs that we know are based on sound research. That needs to be more the way the federal government operates. It's an investment mentality, not just a spending mentality.
But before we go into the results, could you give us a perspective of what was it like, or sort of what was the environment that prompted all this? I mean, was everything broken?
Well, no, not everything. But I do think over the last decade or so, starting with mostly at the state level, there has been a growing awareness that American public education is allowing mediocrity to be the rule. And that might sound harsh, but the data suggests that it's an accurate reflection of reality. There are good schools, obviously, and there are great teachers, and there are successful stories everywhere. But because we didn't have the kind of hard data we needed, and because American public education has not kept up with the way the rest of the world has changed, the world in which schools operate, I think there's a national consensus that was developing over the last decade or so that we needed to do a better job. You know, the whole idea of standards and assessments didn't start with No Child Left Behind. It started with the states. No Child Left Behind sort of represents the latest and fullest manifestation of that. But public opinion polls gradually have said education's a number one priority. And while most Americans still feel it's primarily a state and local function, They think the national government has a larger role to play because it's a national issue. It's one of those national issues that's best resolved at the state and local level, but there's a need for national emphasis on it. And I think it's really quite interesting to watch because not too many years ago, people were arguing for no federal role in public education. And that, I think, is now no longer even a question.
Okay. 2 years later, what kind of results have you observed?
I think the most important result is there's a change in the American conversation about education. And I mean that sincerely. You know, it's a little early to see dramatic changes in test scores, although we've seen some test score changes in mathematics, for example. It's a little early to see troubled schools turn around, although we've seen a lot of schools move in the right direction. But everywhere, and I read local newspapers all the time, the newspapers that cover the school board meetings and all that, everywhere the conversation is all about performance, accountability, test scores, curriculum, highly qualified teachers. It's the kind of thing that wasn't part of the commentary just a few years ago. Now, that's not to say that everyone's real happy, that everyone's satisfied. A lot of people are uptight. There's a lot of anxiety out there. This is a complex law. It requires a lot of change, and human nature being what it is, it makes people uncomfortable. And I understand that. We all understand that. But sometimes we do our best work in this country when we're uncomfortable, when we're forced to think things differently and think things through. So my first argument is you're seeing a change in the conversation and you're seeing a change in the culture of American education. I used the term a few moments ago, invest. We talk all the time about spending money, and we can talk a lot about that because we spend a lot of money in education. We are trying to change the conversation from an emphasis on spending to an emphasis on investing. It goes back to, in essence, sound management. If you're going to invest taxpayer dollars in such an important enterprise, my goodness, you've got to find ways to make sure you know what that investment buys. So again, data-driven decision-making, results-oriented thinking, that's what we're seeing more of. And we're seeing schools moving in the right direction and test scores begin to improve.
What would be a reasonable time frame to see education improvements and results out of the schools?
I think you'll start seeing some changes as the tests are administered this spring. It'll be the second year under No Child Left Behind. It's really the second full year of this new culture of accountability being in place. It filters down gradually. It goes from Washington to state capitals to school districts. That takes time. There's a lot of misinformation in there, so, you know, pretty much distortion. But I think you'll see some movement on schools and education this coming spring.
No Child Left Behind requires annual testing in reading and math in grades 3 through 8. How could administrators, teachers, and parents use these tests to help children succeed?
Well, the most important thing for everyone to recognize is you need to use the information from the test, and that might make common sense. But I tell you, you know, in far too many places, for a very long time, there was a lot of testing going on, but no one used the information to do anything. I mean, I was stunned when I learned that. So the first thing you want to do is, in essence, a test tells you where a child needs work and where a child has knowledge that they're supposed to have. You use that information to guide pedagogy. You use that information to shape curriculum. You use that information to determine how best to help that child. A test is only a tool to help find out where you are and where you need to go. When I was a college professor, I used a syllabus the way we think academic standards ought to be used in the state. It was my way of telling students what I expect of them, how I was going to evaluate them, what knowledge I would expect them to acquire. It was kind of a contract, and it was also a way for students to get a sense of what to expect from me as a professor. And then when I evaluated students with essays or testing, it was a way for me to gauge how well I'm doing my job and how well they're doing their job, and then to do something about the deficiencies on our part, mine and the students. That's what standards and assessments is all about. It's a very basic tool.
Often when testing comes up, it leads to a bunch of arguments which goes like this. People will test to the test. The creativity we imagine disappears.
Yeah. Well, you know, I could be flip and say if the test is a good test, then I don't mind teaching to the test. And while that might sound flip, it's also not far from accurate, frankly. But in essence, what the law says and what most states have been doing is you need a set of academic standards at the state level that are rich, that are rich in content and discipline, and then you need assessments based on those standards. What you should be doing as a teacher is teaching to the standards, not to the test, because the test is one of many ways to gauge performance on those standards. And if the standards are deep and rich and content-driven, then in essence, most teachers have found them to be very helpful because it helps drive curriculum, helps drive pedagogy. Up until the standards movement, what drove curriculum was the textbook. And so the curriculum could vary all over the place based upon what textbooks were being used, how old they were, and how well they were used, and how completed they were. That's a pretty slipshod way of making sure across a state or even within a district, you can measure where students are. Where students are would be primarily a product of which teacher they got and what textbook they used. So, you know, I've heard the complaint or the concern about teaching to the test. It's a valid issue. But most people recognize that a test is merely one of many ways to measure student achievement, and it's a tool. And to those who argue that we're over-testing, I guess my response is, we've been testing since the first classroom was built, and I don't think it's going to go away, so let's make sure we do a better job with it.
Flexibility and accountability are two terms that keep coming up in our conversation about education. Why are they so important? We'll ask Gene Hickok of the Department of Education about these when the Business of Government Hour returns.